Hi, everybody. I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Christine Brennan of USA Today.
I'm Mike Lupica of the New York Daily News and SportsOnEarth.com. And guess what? We're still the sports reporters.
That's right. We are now in new form. Feels like we just basically got the summer break off because the sports reporters on TV ended in May. Got the summer off, rested up, and now we're back to work. And for those of you who are listening to us and saying, hey, we're so happy that you guys decided to continue this, we never decided to end it. we were all doing fine. And then, TV is TV. But we still enjoyed the conversation. It was close to 30 years of tradition. And when we got this great opportunity to work with Cadence and make a podcast, we said, why not? It's all about conversation. And here we are.
And Chris is unfortunately now sitting in the back of the class with the bad kids. But the last thing I said, Mitch, you remember the last thing I said when we went off the air in May is maybe the conversation is going to be continued. And I didn't even have to say maybe because there was never any doubt in our minds that in some form or fashion that we would keep doing this. And starting today and twice a week as opposed to once a week, we're going to keep doing this.
Well, and guys, you know, many may not know this, but back in the 90s, I joined you guys quite a bit as that show really took off. And it's just a terrific opportunity to be with you again. And I think, as we know, podcasts are, we've been told anyway by younger people that podcasts are the future. So why not give it a try? I'm honored to be with you. Thanks so much.
Well, it's nice to bring the past, present, and future all together in one thing. And for those who have never listened to the Sports Reporters before or seen it on television, if you've seen PTI, if you've seen First Take, if you've seen any of the umpteen programs that are like that, know that they were basically birthed by that program and the earlier version of, you know, the Sports Reporters on TV, which came out of Chicago. So the original kind of concept of a panel of people talking about sports sort of began with this program. And, of course, Dick Schaap and John Saunders and, you know, the great tradition of hosting it. And then Mike at the end of the program on TV. It now continues in this form, which is great. So we never wasted a whole lot of time on the start of the Sports Reporters. Let's not do it now. The defending champs of football opened the NFL season last night by laying an egg in front of their home fans and booing Roger Goodell. They gave up 42 points to the Kansas City Chiefs. They lost a couple more players to injury. And they begin the season 0-1. So, Mike, do the ever-resilient Patriots have the rest of the league right where they want them?
Yeah, no. This is good because we get out of the way early the notion that this is when it's all finally going to come to an end in New England. But Mitch and Christine, this to me was the best possible beginning to the football season. They're not going to think of it that way in a six-state region in New England. Yeah. But if they go out and win 28-10 last night, that's not a good story. This is a good story. Alex Smith outplaying Brady is a good story. And it must have made Christine Brennan of Toledo, Ohio, giddy last night that the biggest star in the world became Kareem Hunt, a former member of the Toledo Rockets.
Absolutely, Mike. The Rockets were the team of my childhood, and I was well aware of him just by keeping track of the University of Toledo's football fortunes over the last few years. Certainly, a third-round pick, never thought that you'd see this. And, of course, the greatest performance by an NFL debut ever, 246 yards all told from scrimmage? I mean, this kid was on fire. And, you know, I agree with you completely about the storylines. As if the NFL needed any more storylines, they've got one now. And also, you know, last season, we all remember what happened in that Super Bowl. If the Falcons don't go brain dead and go forward as opposed to backwards and set up for a field goal and make that field goal, they win that Super Bowl. And we're having an entirely different offseason. So, you know, in some ways, as you think about it, this was telegraphed February in the Super Bowl. But it's still a shock to see Brady and the Patriots, and especially the Patriots defense, get shredded the way it was.
Well, if you remember that Super Bowl, it was like 28-3 or whatever. And this is the logical end of that Super Bowl, 42-27. You know, the Patriots score some points at the end, but not enough. It's just that the Super Bowl was really weird, and the Patriots pedigree came through in a Super Bowl more than it did last night. They're losing a lot of players. I mean, you know, you mentioned Tom Brady, but you still have to have somebody to throw to, you know, and Edelman gone and Amendola hurt and these other guys keep going out. Eventually, that kind of stuff takes its toll. And we've seen this with the Patriots before, and they've had some, you know, they're once in a blue moon, they start slow, and they still end up usually being there at the end. But can I say something about Kareem Hunt? He's a third-round draft pick. Now, every time the draft comes around, you hear this thing about, oh, running backs, you don't want to waste a pick on a running back. You know, running backs, you can always go get a running back. You know, this guy's a third-round pick, and he is that game last night. And there's some kind of disconnect going on in my brain, which remembers when running backs used to be what you did, you know, mortgage the future. Didn't Mike Ditka once, like, trade 11 picks for one running back? Ricky Williams. Now it's like, oh, no, running backs, they're too fragile, they're too this. Well, it sure looked like a running back mattered in the game last night. If you can pick up a guy like this in the third round, how many fans of the, how many other teams in the NFL are sitting around going, you mean we didn't pick this guy in the first or second round?
No, I mean, Mitch, this kid last night, it was like watching, you felt like you're watching Steph Curry play basketball, right, as the game unfolded. But what was really interesting to me, and obviously Belichick is already in the office, he's probably spent the night there, was that, you know, the rep on Brady was always this: the only way to beat him is to get in his face or knock him down. The Chiefs went in a completely opposite direction last night and dropped everybody back into coverage. And for this one night, it worked. And again, to me, as great as Hunt was, the secondary storyline was that Alex Smith, who they have such confidence in Kansas City that they drafted a quarterback in the first round, completely outplayed the greatest player of all time last night.
Well, and when you consider this, what, 42 points, that's the most against a Belichick defense ever. That is a significant stat, that's the worst performance ever by a Belichick defense, and coming right out of the gates as they did. The thought that this season moving forward, you know, I'm looking at headlines, will the Patriots be perfect? As you said, we don't have to worry about that anymore. But I think it's really interesting. Last year, the Patriots played, I think it was like four quarterbacks who'd won playoff games. Something, you know, this year they've basically doubled that on the schedule. So this notion that this could be a one-off, which none of us is saying, but, you know, Patriots fans, hello, this may well be your season. You may be looking at a lot of this. Obviously, you mentioned the injuries, Mitch. You know, but when you've got a wonderful Toledo and Kareem Hunt just fumbling the first play, and as you said, shredding the defense the rest of the way, a kid who's never played a down of real football before in the NFL until last night, the Patriots clearly have a tough schedule moving forward, and none of this is going to be particularly easy. It doesn't look like it's going to be an easy a road to hoe for them.
We need them, by the way. I love the idea in sports. I mean, Mitch and we've talked about this forever. We've always said that our favorite storylines in sports are big guy wins or big guy loses. Okay, the Patriots have been the big guy for a long time, and I love the fact that everybody around the world organizes themselves, again, outside of that six state region, against the New England Patriots. And so now, it's a perfect beginning to the season. Belichick now has to react. Brady has to come back. And hey, think about this. Maybe Tom just needs to take the first month of the season off every single year. You know, as always with the National Football League, we are never without compelling and troubling storylines off the field. Everybody has followed the saga of Ezekiel Elliott, who will play against the Giants in the opener on Sunday night, is still trying to get a temporary restraining order to continue to play the season. On top of that, we get news today that a former Giants kicker who only got one game because of the domestic violence program has now gotten six more games, which is interesting. And while all of this is going on, Colin Kaepernick still doesn't have a job. Chris, when you look at all this stuff, and we talk about this frequently, let's start with Elliott. Aren't these guys ever going to learn?
The NFL players? Well, you would hope they would. I mean, we are talking, guys, on the third anniversary of September 8th, of the Ray Rice video exploding into our consciousness. I think everyone remembers probably even where they were that morning. It was almost exactly 3 years ago as we're talking right now. And that story went from a little ember to a full-fledged forest fire within about an hour. And when you saw the video of that punch of his then fiance Janae Palmer Rice and the anger that people felt. So you're Ezekiel Elliott and you're in college, and that just washes over you. Again, allegations on the part of Elliott. Of course, you know, it's he said, she said, and said, that's just use those terms for a reason, right? Because there's one side of the story and then another side of the story. But to your point, as we start this conversation, Mike, is anyone paying attention? Certainly, I think fans, some fans are, women's groups are. But are these players paying attention? I'm not so sure they are.
Well, these are complicated stories, clearly. But what is apparent is that when these things happen and when the players, their agents, their union, the teams start to get involved, they start to run on multiple tracks. There's public opinion, which obviously, Chris, as you mentioned, was the greatest with Ray Rice for one very simple reason. There was videotape, right? That's
exactly.
The only reason.
Exactly.
Because there was videos. There was videotape of whatever went on with Ezekiel Elliott or Josh Brown. These would be different stories. There isn't, so it gets into that, well, I didn't or he didn't. Then, it's not an accident, by the way, that this lawyer, Jeffrey Kessler, the same guy who did Tom Brady's case and dragged that thing out, you know, his four-game suspension for forever, is now arguing Ezekiel Elliott's case because there's public opinion. There's what the NFL initially hands down, and then as we've learned with Roger Goodell, he changes his mind and he gives you another punishment. Then there's what you are legally entitled to by the American justice system, and then there's what you're entitled to by the NFLPA. With all these different tracks, there's so many challenges that we are about to enter the start of the NFL season, and the Dallas Cowboys, one of the best teams in football, Ezekiel Elliott, arguably their most important player or second most important player, still doesn't know if he's going to play one game, four games, six games, or whatever, because they're appealing this thing. And by 5 o'clock today, they should get some kind of answer as to whether he can keep going until there's another challenge put forward here. I don't pretend to be able to understand where all of these things intersect, where your basic American right to work intersects with what the union says you have the right to do, intersects with what King Roger Goodell says you have the right to do. All I know is that at the bottom of all this, as you began, Mike, is this somehow tone deaf or just plain old deaf attitude towards what you can and cannot do with a woman. You know, that this constant sense of I didn't hit her that hard. Josh Brown's explanation. Well, I held her in a chair, but I didn't hit her. When you're an NFL football player, it's a little bit like being a journalist, where there's certain things that you just cannot do. And if you're an NFL player, you have to know by this point that this is out of bounds.
And what makes these stories so complicated? We create equivalencies. We live in the world of whataboutism. Okay, so Ray Rice did this, and now Ezekiel Elliott is accused of doing this, and I do sometimes, and believe me, the NFL is trying to come down on the right side of this because this all began with Roger Goodell bollocksing the original suspension of Ray Rice, which was only for two games, and then the video comes out and the world explodes. But I am troubled sometimes by the fact that there is a completely independent system of justice that is run by, King Roger Goodell, in which the arbitrator is an NFL guy. So the NFL essentially becomes judge, jury, and sentencer in this point. And there are some problems in the Ezekiel Elliott story. I'm not defending him. If he touched it, if he did what he is accused of doing with this woman, he's a bum for doing that, okay? But there has to be some sort of due process where if you read the stories on this, that one of the female investigators from the league had trouble with the accuser's version of things. And what I'm saying is this is not exactly a model of like Hamiltonian justice in this world of pro football.
Right. You know, Mike, though, you know, when people ask, well, who gave Roger Goodell this power to do this? Well, it was the union that gave Roger Goodell this power in the previous collective bargaining agreement. So there's that. I'll also throw out a name that's on the front pages right now, Robert Mueller. After the Ray Rice saga, as we all recall it, the NFL commissioned none other than the same Robert Mueller to issue a report on what the NFL should do moving forward. Because people were outraged. Everyone wanted to hang Roger Goodell by his fingernails. I was critical of him. You guys were. We all were. And Robert Mueller, back in January of 2015, issued a report. And one of the main things he said was the NFL needed to investigate for itself. It could not rely on law enforcement because Atlantic City and the grand jury went nowhere with the Ray Rice saga, except some probation. So once Robert Mueller's looking at this, he says, NFL, you've got to do more. So that was the reaction. I agree with you. It can be messy. It's not always black and white. There's a lot of gray area. I also would point to this. Talking about videotapes, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Ezekiel Elliott, there is a videotape, not of anything involving domestic violence, but something horrible that would probably get all of us fired if we did it and it was caught on videotape, pulling down a woman's shirt, revealing her bare breast in public at the Mardi Gras parade in Dallas earlier this year.
I saw that.
It's pretty bad.
It's not bad. It's awful. And of course, when you watch it repeated over and over again, I had the exact same reaction, Chris, when I saw it. I was like, anybody I know would be gone from their job if this thing was. And somehow it was like, oh, well, they were at a parade or it was fun or he was just having fun or I don't get it. But it's part of that double standard or triple standard that exists for pro athletes. And that's why I don't have a problem saying what I did, which is it's not that hard to keep your hands off of a woman inappropriately when you are basically trained to keep your hands around a football forever and a day. And don't, you know, the same thing that clicks in your head, like, okay, I'm in the open field, put two arms around a football. That's second nature, right, to an NFL player. Why can this not be second nature to professional athletes? There are just certain situations you cannot get yourself into because, as Mike suggested, there may be cases where you didn't actually do anything, but the circumstances are such that it's going to look like you did, or you're going to be alone with somebody and they might say something. And then, of course, if you actually do something, you're really, really in trouble. So just stay away from the situation. It's not that hard.
Mitch, I'm the father of a daughter. I have three sons that they all know how they were raised. Okay. And I'm not I've gotten to know Ray Rice in the years since, and I admire the way he's tried to make something of his life and become an advocate against everything he did. That's a separate thing. Okay. So nobody was tougher on Ray Rice than I was in the media. No one. You can go back and read the columns. You can go and look at what I said. So I'm not acting as a defense attorney for Ezekiel Elliott. But I'm just asking you guys, if you are troubled, this is from Kevin Seifert's piece the other day at ESPN.com. That investigator, Kia White Roberts, argued against discipline for Elliott because she found some problems with the accuser's testimony. But Goodell took the advice of Lisa Friel, his senior vice president, and issued the six-game discipline everywhere. So there's sometimes we can't just convict them without at least doing what the NFLPA is doing its job, even though it has rolled over for Goodell in the past, and trying to get people to look at this whole case. That's all. I'm not defending Elliott.
All right, so we know the Jets and the Bills are now playing for the division lead this weekend. Got the Giants and the Cowboys. But the big one has to be the Packers and Seahawks, guys, with Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson playing each other. I'll just throw it out to both of you. Who has more to prove, Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson?
Oh, I think Aaron Rodgers to me is the best football player on the planet, okay? And he has won
You
one
still
Super
say
Bowl,
that. This goes back to the television version of this, but I always sat across from you and said, I can't believe you say that all the time. I mean, I respect you for it. I can't believe that you would say that over Tom Brady, given what they've actually accomplished. Aaron Rodgers is a great regular season player, first couple rounds of playoffs players, but Tom Brady wins Super Bowls.
Yes, and it goes into the whole thing of do you measure greatness simply by rings and trophies, or do you measure greatness by the ability to play the game? And I'll say this about Rodgers, okay? Michael Jordan is going to end up with way more championships than LeBron James. I think LeBron James is the best player on the planet right now. All I'm saying is I believe that just in terms of what he brings to the field, he has more talent, and the things he does, as great as Brady is, he can do things that Brady cannot do. And
so why hasn't he won as much? Team around
because
him?
He's never had a good defense there. Because Mitch, ask yourself a question. Again, this may be a false equivalency, but it's one of my favorite things when I'm talking about sports. Let's have them switch sides, okay? Let's have Aaron Rodgers go play quarterback for Bill Belichick all these years, and have Tom Brady go play for not only Mike McCarthy, who's a fine coach, and have Dom Capers defense. Twice in Rodgers' career, he went to overtime in the playoffs and never got to touch the ball because of the single dumbest rule in sports,
right, the coin flip.
a season being decided by a stupid coin flip. So we can agree to disagree on that. So he has a lot on the line this year, but I believe that the Seahawks have the most on the line because they are still recovering from one interception at the end of the Super Bowl when it looked like they were set up to be a dynasty.
Yeah. Well, I agree that Seattle has to overcome a two-year-old hangover. But I do think that the proverbial window, it's not closing because he's 33. And, you know, people forget that Aaron Rodgers spent a first couple years just sitting and watching Brett Favre. So he's got more in the tank that you might think than his age would necessarily indicate. And he, you know, with Tom Brady indicating that you can play till you're 70, 33 is, you know, you're not even at the midpoint if you keep yourself in shape. But he has had opportunities. Mike, you're right. It's a coin flip sometimes. Aaron Rodgers has had bad games. You know, he does. He's not perfect. And he has had first halves of seasons where, you know, he's had to say, you know, calm down, relax, we're all good. But that kind of stuff takes its toll in terms of coming back and finally making the playoffs by beating the Lions every single year in the last game of the season, or that's how it feels. But he needs to win another championship in order to secure his place there. So individually, for all his greatness, and he is, I think, the most, physically threatening quarterback in the league. I would go along with you like that. Like, you just can't come up with ways to stop him. Although I disagree with you about switching teams. I think Tom Brady, with the receivers that Green Bay has had over the years and the running backs that Green Bay has had over the years, would have done just fine with Green Bay's offense. Maybe not with their defense, but he would have performed the same way with their offense. He's
Mitch
not
Albom,
skillless.
My dear friend. Mitch Albom, my dear friend. Well, was it Aaron Rodgers who lost to the Atlanta Falcons, or was Aaron Rodgers being torched in that game last year, or was it another Dom Capers defense?
Okay, we'll disagree on the defensive part.
Well,
because I'm trying to stay
I'll break
Aaron
the tie.
Rodgers and Tom Brady. Yes, go ahead, Chris. Break the tie.
You know, yeah. I'm going to go with Brady on this. You just cannot argue with the results. And as you said, until Aaron Rodgers wins a few more Super Bowls, if he ever does, it's got to be Brady. I mean, you can't. And yes, Brady has had this great team around him. And yes, Brady has had Belichick. But you also cannot extricate a quarterback from his coach. That has been the history of the NFL. Great coaches, great quarterbacks, you know, whether you're Lombardi and Starr or Shula and Greasy. I mean, this is just the way of the world. So I'll do that. But I think maybe what we're talking about now, just following a few hours after a shocking start to the NFL season, is an opening for everybody. If Brady and the Patriots are not the Patriots and Brady of old, and we don't know. One game does not a season make. We have no idea. But if they're not, then this kind of conversation we're having, guys, is going to happen every week, and it's going to be a blast because you will have, you know, Aaron Rodgers' season opportunity, Russell Wilson, they're not even in the same conference, but there's just this breath of fresh air potentially saying, whoa, okay, Brady's human. The Patriots lost. They didn't look good. And here we go into a season where anything is possible.
I'm not accepting you two ganging up on me. I'm going to ask our occasionally unhinged executive producer, Lou Pellegrino. Lou, we got all the best players in the world down on the field. You're picking one quarterback to play next Sunday's game. Would you take Tom Brady or would you take Aaron Rodgers?
Well, from what I saw last night, I would probably take Aaron Rodgers.
Fine. Okay. First of all,
it's a tie.
In this new world of podcasting, sponsorship is part of it, which we welcome and we thank. And I'm actually getting the honor of welcoming the first sponsor to this first program. And because I believe I told, you know, when we started working with DG and Cadence, I said, listen, I'm happy to, you know, support Reed sponsors, but I want to make sure I know what the product is. I don't believe in, you know, just talking about things that I don't have any personal experience with. Sure. So they said, fine, you know, that's totally ethical and fine. And next thing I know, I get a package in the mail from our sponsor, MeUndies, which I did not know when the package arrived that that's what it was. And I happened to be with my wife at the kitchen counter, and there's this thing sitting there from the mail. And she said, what's that? I said, I don't know. Let's see. And I ripped it open, and inside were five pairs of MeUndies. Try explaining that one to your wife when the package arrives as to what exactly. So I said, oh, it's from the sports reporters. And she said, so the sports reporters are sharing underwear? What's that, Mike's underwear or something? And I said, no, it's MeUndies. And if you want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, I can now personally say, having worn them, MeUndies can do it. The perfect balance is hard to find. Don't sacrifice style or comfort, but check out MeUndies.com and find out the best pair of underwear in the world. I'm still hoping to go to that website and see Mike like posing with his hands on his hips with one of those, you know. I don't know if that's going to happen. MeUndies will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own, made from a sustainably sourced natural soft fabric. That explains it. It is three times softer than cotton. They're the ultimate feel-good underwear for when you want to feel like you're naked and not actually be that way, which comes in handy. And for the guys, MeUndies Diamond Seam Pouch cradles your jewels and gives you, thank you for making me read this, by the way, gives your privates, let's say, the support they need without feeling too tight. And ladies will love the soft, eco-friendly fabric, so soft. And there is a 100% satisfaction guarantee as well. They guarantee you will love your undies or your money back. And right now, MeUndies has an exclusive offer just for our listeners here. Get 20% off your first pair and free shipping. I suggest not having your wife around when they arrive, though. Explain it to her ahead of time. And MeUndies is so sure you'll love their underwear, they even offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. You order a pair, and if you don't love your first pair, you get a full refund. So that's a no-brainer. 20% off, free shipping, 100% satisfaction guarantee. What are you waiting for? Go to MeUndies.com/reporters. That's MeUndies.com/reporters. All right. So the NFL season starts this weekend. We're talking about Aaron Rodgers and other quarterbacks and Tom Brady who are playing. Colin Kaepernick is still unemployed. His lack of a job may inspire protests around football stadiums this weekend. Mike, is it justified or is Kaepernick's sudden obsolescence a self-inflicted thing?
Mitch, when he first started taking a knee, I wrote this in the Daily News. I said it on the sports reporters. I believed that I wasn't passing any judgment on what his political beliefs. I said this was the beginning of the end of his NFL career. I wrote that at the time, and I firmly believed it. But there is no question in my mind that this man, when you look at some of the other people that have jobs in the NFL, when you look at the fact that Josh McCown is going to be the starting quarterback for the New York Jets, he is jobless right now because of his political beliefs. And to me, that is a shameful thing for his sport. These are acts of cowardice on the parts of general manager who could have improved their football team. And we're going to hear all the stuff. Oh, he doesn't throw well from the pocket. Oh, all I know is a few years ago, he was a good enough quarterback under Jim Harbaugh to have a ball in the air at the end of a Super Bowl in the Superdome to win the big game. And the idea that he's not a good football player anymore or is not worthy of being either a starter or a backup in the NFL, it's all because of his political beliefs. And people say, oh, well, other guys are doing it now. No, he became the face of this. When my buddy Paul Westfall was coaching the Phoenix Suns, he once said to one of his players, if you don't start playing harder, I'm going to have to go to the press and tell him about your stomach problem. And the guy said, I don't have a stomach problem, coach. And Paul said, yeah, you do. No guts. This is, forget about the no fun league. This is the no guts league in relating to Colin Kaepernick.
And, you know, Mike, I'm going to take it a step further and say what a missed opportunity this is for the National Football League. And let me explain. You know, you 50, 60-year-old fans, they're not going to be around in 30 years. Who's going to be around in 30 years? The 20-year-olds, the 30-year-olds. Whatever the NFL looks like, whether we have holograms running through our living room as opposed to TV screens, I don't know. But younger people are certainly more energized on these topics. Of course they are. After Charlottesville, I think the nation has, that's a crossroads. It's a very different view and President Trump's dreadful reaction to it. I think there's a lot there that is coming to play and will continue to come to play on our college campuses and in our pro leagues and protest, et cetera. So if you have Colin Kaepernick signed, if he's not on the sidelines, but he's on a team, and even if he's not playing, if he's in a uniform, what could he mean? First of all, it negates any negative feeling that people have about him, that players are angry that he's been shunned or blackballed or whatever the right word is. He's playing. He's there. That takes that off the table. He also could have been an ally. You saw, close to a dozen Cleveland Browns kneeling a couple of weeks ago. There was at least one player last night. There will be more and more players kneeling, or at least the same number. If you've got Kaepernick as an ally, the league can use him, talk to him, lean on him. Obviously, a man who is calm, a man who is moving forward and making good his pledge for $1 million for charity. He had vowed to not, according to reports, not kneel this year, but stand. He could have been such a resource. And that is why that is such a missed opportunity for the National Football League.
Well, you guys have both well stated his right to express his opinion and the value that he could bring in respecting that right. So let me put on the table for sake of completing the conversation that it is not just about him not standing up for the national anthem. There are plenty of players who haven't done that now, too many to count or to keep track of in the NFL, who are perfectly fine with their job positions and nobody's threatening them. I think in Colin Kaepernick's case, it's more than just about not kneeling for the national anthem. This is a guy who tweeted out an image of a slave catcher badge and a police badge and said, remember who they are. That is not a small thing to law enforcement around this country. This is a guy who wore socks with images of police as pigs. This is a guy who's worn T-shirts that have been offensive. This is a guy who apparently, according to Ray Lewis, his girlfriend sent out a tweet, you know, comparing a shot from, what was it, Django Unchained with Ray Lewis's, arms around a white coach and made comparisons to it while Baltimore was considering hiring him for the job. So it's not just about, let's be clear about it, it's not just about not standing up for the national anthem. You know, Colin Kaepernick has not backed down on his position, particularly with regard to police. And you and I, all of us, have been at these games. Police are a very big part of a presence at an NFL football game. You see what's going on now in Cleveland, right, with the, they're refusing to take part in a flag-holding mm-hmm. ceremony, right? Because some of the players knelt during the national anthem of a preseason game. You go to, there are hundreds of police officers at a football game, right? They are part of the presence at a football game. So you're an NFL team owner, and you're looking at all this stuff, and you're looking at the media that's going to cover Colin Kaepernick, who's going to be your backup. Because let's face it, we all know this. If he had Tom Brady's skills most recently, he'd be on 10 teams, okay? Everybody would make... We spent an earlier part of the show talking about Ezekiel Elliott doing something far more heinous than sitting down for a national anthem. And you know, the Cowboys are doing everything they can to keep him on the field. But if he's going to be a backup and he's going to attract all these questions from reporters, he's going to tweet while he's on your team, all the rest of it, we cannot be surprised that NFL owners don't want him on the roster. I'm not saying it's the right thing. It certainly isn't in terms of free speech. But we cannot be shocked. He's not the first player to be too controversial to be worth the trouble. And while, Mike, you're right, he was a pass away. That was a few years ago. He has not been the same player. And this is what they're saying to them, to each other or to themselves. And that's why, in my opinion, hasn't been picked up.
First of all, the Sox with policemen as pigs was almost before the chapter one of this story. Okay, and but here's the thing, Mitch. This is a league where you can be behind the wheel of a car and be legally intoxicated and kill someone and still go back to work in the NFL. This has happened in the recent past in the National Football League. Nobody's more pro-cop than I am. I can't tell you how many columns I've written about cops in the front of the New York Daily News. I don't subscribe to anything that is anti-cop, but I understand the position that African Americans have on police in this country in some of these cases, because there's too many of them to ignore. That's a separate conversation. All I'm saying is he should not be unemployable in this sport, in this time, because of his beliefs. To me, that's not who we're supposed to be. And the reason they won't give him a job is because it's bad for business. That's all. You're right. It's bad for business.
Right. And I think it's worth reiterating, things changed after Charlottesville in this country. We don't even know how all the manifestations of that will play out, not just in sports, in our culture. And so throw that into the mix, obviously, the tragedy of Charlottesville. And I think it is important for all of us to say, hey, I stand for every anthem. Mitch, Mike, we've been at Olympics. You hear a lot of anthems, the U.S. anthem. I get tears in my eyes when I'm out of the country and I hear our anthem. So I am that goofy about it personally. But I also believe it is so important, as we agree, to say that it is, of course, part of this country. One of the great things about the United States is that you defend the right of someone like Kaepernick or those Cleveland Browns or anyone else to kneel or not stand. That's the beauty of the United States, and why one owner of the NFL couldn't have figured that out, who obviously needed a quarterback. It's really interesting to me, and I do think it's just a big, big mistake on their part.
We've done a lot of football in the first Sports Reporters podcast, but one of the things I love about the baseball season is that it is a big, long, epic novel with lots of plot twists every year. And you look at this season, Astros were the best team, then the Dodgers were the best team. Dodgers are going to win 120 games, except now they lost 12 out of 13, and the Indians have won 15 in a row, and the Diamondbacks have a big winning streak going. And that's all prelude to September in baseball, because with everything else that's going on right now, we're looking at a Yankee Red Sox September, and Chris, that's never a bad thing in the national pastime.
Oh my God, it's a great thing. It's a great thing. You're right. This is the best time in baseball, and I think the idea of a team that gets hot at the right time, we've seen it over and over again, Mike, where that team then ends up having a great run in the postseason. And, you know, the Red Sox and Yankees being one of the very few divisions that actually has a race. And, of course, the wild card part. And the Yankees just taking 2 out of 3 from Baltimore. Now they're going on the road, tough teams, Texas, Tampa Bay. I mean, that's good stuff. Since we started with an Ohio theme much earlier, Northern Ohio, with Hunt, let's continue it with the Cleveland Indians, because they were so close. What? A rain delay away from winning the World Series potentially last year. And they 15 straight wins as we talk. They're on fire. I wouldn't be surprised. You can have your Red Sox, your Yankees, your whoever's. I wouldn't, and Astros, who were so hot for a while. I wouldn't be surprised if we see those Indians right back in the World Series again, and maybe even winning it this time around.
Well, the nice thing about a long season is that usually by the end of it, most of the predictions of who was going to be good, barring big injuries or trades, usually end up fairly accurate. And we all said, yeah, with that great World Series last year, Chicago and Cleveland an inch away from one another. I remember doing the Sports Reporters on television at the beginning of baseball season and saying, if Cleveland has this challenge, you know, is it one of those things like we were talking about Seattle, you know, you don't get over that hangover of losing the Super Bowl and you don't get back up there? Or is the hunger of being, you know, a minute away from winning a World Series going to drive them all season? In the end, it has proven with this winning streak that they're on here now that they're going to finish strong and go into the postseason with that kind of attitude. The Chicago Cubs, had the malaise that, you know, a lot of teams have after they win the championship. Oh, they're not the same. But look at them right now. You know, they're sitting on top
of
the Central.
They're playing fine.
They're playing fine. They're going to win the Central, and they're probably going to be there. The Dodgers, everybody thought were loaded at the beginning. And they're really interesting to me. You know, like they were, what were they, like 91-36, and now they're 92-48. You know, and it's, they're still 100 miles ahead of everybody else.
And they get Mitch. They get Kershaw back, and even he doesn't help. And, you know, what you were talking about, Mitch, what we're going to see from the Indians is exactly right. Can they do what the Royals did a couple of years ago, which, you know, the Royals had the tying run on third base in the bottom of the ninth, a game seven of the World Series, and lost and came right back and win the World Series. And I think we all agree that we can just hope that whoever wins does it without cheating off of their Apple Watch. Don't you think so, Christine?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, leading us into that topic, you know, that rivalry Yankees-Red Sox has had everything, has been everything. But this week's news about, what do we call it, Applegate? Wow. The Yankees said the Red Sox were stealing signals with an Apple Watch. The Red Sox replied, right, that the Yankees are cheating off the YES Network. It sounds like everything is moving along just fine in this greatest of all baseball rivalries. But, you know, you've got to... The time from stealing it to relaying it to giving it to the batter who then can process it. Wow. I don't know. I think I hear you laughing, and I'm kind of laughing.
Chris, here's the thing. Chris and Mitch, my friend Mike Barnicle said if they were doing what is alleged they were doing, okay, it proves that pitchers and batters are taking too long to get after it. Because if you have time to get it off your watch, tell somebody in the dugout, send it out to the guy at second base, who then relays it to the batter, the game's going way more slowly than we thought it was.
Can I just say that this is the best advertisement for the Apple Watch that they've ever had, okay? Baseball players everywhere have reason to pick up the Apple Watch.
Following Mitch's fine advertisement for the Apple Watch, we should also be reminded today's episode of Sports Report is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through a site within one day. Colin Kaepernick should try this. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/reporters. That's ZipRecruiter.com/reporters. One more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/reporters. So while all the other stuff that's going on in sports that we've already talked about on the first Sports Reporters podcast, our national championship is being conducted in tennis in New York City. I'm going on Friday night to watch Mr. Nadal play Del Potro, even though we got cheated out of Federer and Nadal. And on the women's side has been more compelling. And I cannot remember the first time, this is the first time in a long time I've said that about women's tennis. Four young American women in the semifinals, three of them African-American in a sport that is whiter than Wonder Bread historically. Sloane Stephens plays a wonderful match and beats Venus Williams last night. And Madison Keys whips up on Coco Vandeweghe. Chris, this has been not just an advertisement for American tennis, but shown everybody that the sport can be more than Serena Williams.
Absolutely. Because, yeah, Serena's out having just had a baby girl, and look at what's going on in her absence. And, you know, that match, Venus and Sloane Stephens, Mike, really was three matches. Sloane Stephens wins the first one, set 6-1. Venus comes storming back 6-0, and then, of course, 7-5, one of the great sets you would see, I've seen in a long, long time. Venus is 37. She has Sjogren's disease. She has been the voice of her sport. She's the latter-day Billie Jean King, demanding equal prize money at Wimbledon and getting it a good 10 years or so ago. What a class act, and I love this. When Venus left after losing to Sloane Stephens, kind of the passing of the torch, potentially, although I'm never going to count a Williams sister out, who stood and cheered and applauded Venus as she left the court? Sloane Stephens. And talking later about how important it was for her. So Sloane Stephens, Madison Keys, the final. And this is exactly what the USTA and all of Billie Jean King, Chris Everett, everyone has dreamed of and hoped for. New faces, new names. And guess what? Their role models being, of course, Venus and Serena, inspiring these young kids. And now here they come, taking the reins from them.
And it is probably the best thing that can happen to tennis, even though, you know, that may sound harsh to the Williams sisters, because everybody wants to keep their legacy going. But they do need a last name other than Williams to be recognizable in the sport. They've got to. You know, eventually, these two amazing sisters are going to move on. And, you know, there was that period of time where if it wasn't Chrissy and Martina, it wasn't worth watching, you know. Well, but that changed, and younger players came along and challenged them, and eventually, and, you know, there was like a sadness of, oh, yeah, but we want them to. You've got to invest in new young talent. The fact that Venus Williams is playing at 37 is a story in and of itself. I mean, this is just not ages that you play competitive tennis. And she has been everything that you say she has. And her sister is one of the most remarkable athletes to ever play any sport at any time. But the future of interest in the sport lies in developing new names, young names that will come along. And this is a great thing for Sloane Stephens. She's got an interesting story, too. You know, she's had her own comeback issues and you know, already at such a young age, a kind of a rise, fall, and rise back up again. This is as far, I think, Chris, you know this better than I, this is as far as she's ever gotten, right, at a major, right, by far.
First major final.
Right.
She was ranked 934th in the world a month
That's
ago.
That's a great story. And if she goes on and wins this thing or beats Madison Keys or even Madison Keys wins it, great story for American tennis. And it's nothing like a win at the Open, you know, in our backyard to help propel you to a national recognition, which, let's face it, when it comes to America, we go up and down with tennis if we've got an American to root for. You know, that's just always how it has been. And this could be very helpful to the long range of the sport. I hope the Williamses play till they're 60, but they can't be the only names recognizable to the average sports fan in tennis for tennis to be healthy in America.
Before we get to our parting shots, another sponsor of today's episode is Betterment. Betterment is the largest independent online financial advisor with one mission: to empower you to make the most of your money so you can live better. It's designed to help improve long-term returns and lower taxes for retirement planning, building wealth, and other financial goals. 270,000 customers and $10 billion in assets under management. Based on the information you give Betterment, they make personalized recommendations for how much to invest, how much to risk for you to take on in your portfolio, and the type of investment account you should have. Everything they do is designed to lower taxes and increase returns. They believe you should be able to get financial advice anytime, anywhere. All Betterment customers can receive advice from their team of licensed financial experts through their mobile app's messaging feature. Betterment is a fiduciary, which means they can only act in your best interest, not their own. That means they don't get commissions for recommending certain funds and don't get funds to sell. They do what they believe is right for you. Low transparent advisory fees compared to traditional services. Only a 0.25% annual fee with unlimited messaging to their team of licensed financial experts. Technology that helps make investing easier. Investment team shouldn't be confusing or frustrating. Their technology is built to make managing your wealth an easy and even an enjoyable experience. Betterment can give you a clear view of your net worth when you sync your outside accounts, such as bank accounts and other investments. They can show you how much outside brokerage accounts may be costing you in fees and uninvested cash. Investing involves risk. Sports Reporters listeners can get up to 1 year managed free. For more information, visit Betterment.com/reporters. Betterment, rethink what your money can do.
All right, as per the tradition of the Sports Reporters going back to the very beginning, it is time now for our parting shots, and Chris leads off.
Thanks, Mitch. Well, for almost two decades, if I said U.S. women's tennis, you would say one name, Williams. Sisters Venus, Serena have been the dominant American women for pretty much the entire 21st century. In fact, the last U.S. woman not named Williams to win a Grand Slam was Jennifer Capriati back in 2002. Why? Well, here's a theory for you. Title IX, the law that opened the floodgates for women and girls to play sports, gave them so many more options of sports to play that they didn't have to stick to the traditional women's sports like tennis and golf. Think about it. Had she had a choice, Billie Jean King might have been a great soccer player. Perhaps Chris Evert would have played lacrosse. But they didn't have all the options girls and women have now, so tennis was it. This makes what happened this week in New York all the more remarkable. For the first time in 32 years, all four women's singles semifinalists at a Grand Slam tournament were American. And the most interesting part about it? Only one of them was named Williams.
A friend of mine and the unlikeliest immortal in the history of the New York Yankees died on Thursday. His name was Gene Michael, who played, coached, managed, general managed, and scouted for the Yankees. And it was Stick, when he was general manager of the Yankees in the early 90s, who began to make the Yankees back into the Yankees again. George Steinbrenner had been suspended from baseball, and Michael was in charge. Derek Jeter came into the farm system on his watch, and so did Mo Rivera and Andy Pettit and Jorge Posada. Stick hired Buck Showalter, who calls Stick Michael the greatest evaluator of baseball talent he's ever known, as manager. Stick traded for Paul O'Neill. The four World Series in 5 years the Yankees started winning in 1996 started there. Stick will never get a plaque in Monument Park, but boy, did he sure earn one.
What tie do I wear? That was how the Sports Reporters always began for me. Saturday night, trying to figure out what tie matched what jacket to wear on Sunday morning. For nearly 30 years, ties, jackets, and oh, make sure no brown shoes with a blue suit, were a weekly challenge to me and others on the Sports Reporters. But it was part of the tradition. Smart conversation, smart dress. Dick Schaap and John Saunders would demand nothing less. So it was weird today to get up for this new incarnation and wear, and I'm not making this up, a t-shirt from a local cider mill and Nike shorts. Part of me felt like I should wash my hair, get some makeup on, get the black dress shoes out. And then I said, nah. Because after all, the Sports Reporters has always been about ideas, conversation, and respect amongst peers. The ties were the skin, voices were the soul. Hopefully we've demonstrated today that the soul and those voices go on, even if that pinched feeling around my neck does not. Thank you for joining us for this inaugural podcast of the Sports Reporters. We hope you enjoyed today's broadcast. Go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe so you won't miss a single episode of upcoming Sports Reporters show. And with thanks to the people who started this tradition, including Dick and John and all the people who came along to brought it to this next stage, we say thank you to the past and look forward to our future. We'll see you again.